Like many of us, Scott Parker worked in a restaurant as a teenager. He worked many odd jobs in these restaurants, from a dishwasher and busboy to a valet. Scott saw something more, though. He was fascinated by the industry and dreamed of owning his very own restaurant someday. To some of his surprise, he would go on to open dozens of companies, turning into one of Northern Virginia's most well-known entrepreneurs. You can find Scott's companies around every corner in Arlington, from a boxing studio called Bash, the barbershop Bearded Goat, and bars and restaurants such as Bronson Beer Hall, Barley Mac, and Don Tito. In this episode, Scott Parker describes what it takes to be a serial entrepreneur and what he envisions the next few months to be like in the hospitality industry that is being hit so hard by the global pandemic. You're listening to the Northern Virginia Business Podcast. My name is Jessica Dubois.
And I'm Derek Wynn. Here, we chronicle the stories of successful business owners and executives who stand out from the crowd.
Whether you're driven by purpose or profit, tune in to learn how these leaders have built successful businesses,
helping to shape the landscape of Northern Virginia.
Hello, Scott Parker. Thank you so much for joining us on the Nova Business Podcast.
How's it going? Good to be here.
We are so excited to have you on. So we want to go ahead and just start with learning a little bit more about your upbringing. Like, where are you from? What type of household did you grow up in?
Sure. I'm from southern New Jersey, almost all the way down at the bottom. I grew up right outside, about 10, 15 minutes from Atlantic City and right across the water from Ocean City, New Jersey. So I grew up in sort of a small town, I guess kind of a town that works a little bit on resort areas, tourists, people coming to the Bend, and we're sort of, my town is sort of right across the water from that and those beach towns. And grew up, you know, with an awesome mom and dad and a little brother, and yeah.
So just curious, Scott, what would the 16-year-old Scott Parker have to say about the Scott Parker today?
I don't know. That guy was a little crazier, a little bit more rambunctious. You know, maybe never get into partying. You know, I spent a lot of my younger years partying from about 16 to probably about 27. You know, I did a lot of drinking in that time, a lot of partying. I actually became more or less an alcoholic and quit drinking when I was 27 years old. So I think if I could have skipped that phase of 10 years, I probably could have been a lot more healthier, a lot more productive, and you know, maybe been doing some different stuff these days. Not that what I'm doing is not what I want to be doing, but you know, I think I'd probably just make better decisions. I had a lot of ups and downs a decade after turning 16. So I think it could have been a lot more ups and a lot less downs. You know, maybe that's where some of those lessons were learned, though. Maybe that was important. But I think the 16-year-old version of me would probably be pretty excited. I think back then I didn't know what I was going to do in the world, and I had no idea what I was going to do, and I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing now and doing a lot of fun stuff and working on some cool projects. So I'm not sure exactly what he would say, but I think things have turned out, you know, pretty much okay so far.
Did that time, though, when you were, you know, 16 and those later teen years, is that what got you interested in the restaurant business?
Yeah, I started working in restaurants when I was 14. I started washing dishes at a local breakfast shop right near where I lived and grew up. And I really took to it right away. Restaurants always excited me. I was always attracted to them. And from there, it sort of grew and grew. And I did every job in the restaurant industry, or most jobs. You know, I was started as a dishwasher. Then I was a short order cook for a short time. I was a busboy, a barback, a server, a bartender. I even did some valet parking, did some managing, really food runner, really pretty much everything throughout the restaurant industry. I got a little bit of all of it. So I did that stuff for probably a good 10 years, and that led me to always being excited about the industry and wanting to work in it and grow in it. And that's how, you know, I just kind of went more and more with it over time.
You know, it's interesting you say that, and you mentioned that I came up in the service industry too. And I look for that as almost like a trait or a skill in some of the people that we bring on board here. I mean, it's just one of those things where these are, you know, working in that industry, a lot of that just can't be taught.
Yeah.
You know, it's like understanding it and just being a good person. So
yeah.
How do you look for people for your organizations, your companies? Like, do you look for that same kind of a background? Do you hire people like you? Like, what does that process look like?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point. A lot of times we do look for experience, sure. But I think, you know, that's one of the challenges is people, you know, you always hear the question like, well, if no one will hire me, how do I get experience? And so I think it's in the restaurant industry, it's very important to hire the right kinds of people. And, you know, I would rather hire someone with limited to no experience than someone with a bunch of experience, either has the wrong habits or it's just not the right kind of person. So we're looking generally for people that are enthusiastic, energetic, you know, willing to be part of a team culture, that kind of thing, rather than someone who just has a bunch of experience, but maybe not the right attitude. And, you know, having the right energy in the restaurant industry is so important. So sometimes that can be a lot more important than the experience itself. So, you make a good point. And we're just looking for people that we think are great team players. Who's going to come to work excited, ready to pitch in, ready to be an awesome part of the team, because they can probably be taught to do things a little differently than they did before, or they can be taught how to serve tables. And so we're really looking for a person that's fired up and wants to really contribute to the team organization.
Yeah, I can vouch for that as well. I don't think that was on my resume, Derek, but I was also a server. That's awesome. But I do want to ask you about the first startup that you were a part of, or the first company that you started. Like, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I got to, when was that? The fall of 2006, I started 9-to-5-ing, and I did really bad really quickly at 9-to-5-ing. I did poorly at it, but I just couldn't stand it. I didn't like office work. I didn't like having to dress up business casual every day and do things that really weren't inspiring me, and, you know, work for other people and all that stuff. And I was really down and out on it really fast, probably the first few months. And then from there, I just started to realize, I don't know when I got the idea in my mind, I was probably 24, 25 then, that, you know, I wanted to own a restaurant. I want to be a restaurant owner. I want to be a bar owner. Really then, I was still sort of in that party atmosphere. I wanted to get into bars, but I didn't have any money. And so, and I didn't know that about fundraising. I didn't know how to get money from investors. All that stuff was so new to me. I didn't have a big network of people. So I really just started working all the time. I worked, you know, a second job, five, often six nights a week. I was working really around the clock. So I was doing my 9-to-5. I was working nights at restaurants and saving everything I could. And then it got to the point where about 6 years into that, I was 29 and I thought I'd saved a bunch of money. And so I asked two guys I know who are still my partners to this day, you know, what should I do? I've saved some money. I want to go into the restaurant business. You know, I want to invest in a restaurant. And at that point in time, they owned a place that was called Caribbean Breeze in Arlington, and they wanted to change it into an American bar. And so we created a place called A-Town Bar and Grill, because they basically said, well, we want to change Caribbean Breeze anyway. We want to do an American concept, sort of sports bar feel. We should all talk together and get together on that. And we did. You know, we struck a partnership and opened A-Town in August of 2012. And that went, you know, really, really well for 7 years. And from there, A-Town sort of went so well that we were able to do other restaurants. And then I sort of started growing into other businesses and different projects from there.
What was the idea that, I'm just thinking like how you even thought this was all possible? Like, I feel like there had to have been someone in your life or like a manager that you had or business owners around you where you thought, hey, this is possible. I can actually maybe start my own restaurant.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I ever truly believed it was possible. I really wanted to do it, but I don't know if I thought that it would work out. I hadn't really seen it done. I did know some guys that I had lived with, and they franchised a local restaurant called Boss Dog Cafe. There's a few locations around Nova, sandwiches, salads, beers. So they franchised a location of that. And when they did that, I remember thinking, like, you know, if these guys can do it, maybe I can do it. And I didn't know what to do. I was looking at on like bizbuysell.com and different like websites online where you could buy businesses. And I really wanted to do it. It was my goal, but I don't know if I just really ever believed that I would actually get there. And then finally, you know, I approached these two guys who are still my partners to this day in some of my restaurants, and we did get there. And so I did get the opportunity to do it. And so it was a challenge. That was, you know, to your point, that was one of the biggest challenges, is there were not a lot of people around me telling me to do it. There were not a lot of people around me that knew how to do it. And so that made it disheartening and scary. And so it was just tough to, you know, sort of get going.
Yeah, I could imagine too. I mean, you're talking about, you know, really busting your hump to do this because you had kind of this vision, right? I mean, you talk to, you know, 29-year-olds today and it's like, yeah, I'm not going to save to do a business. I'm going to save to do something else. So like, what kind of sacrifices did you make during that time period? I mean, did you basically have no life outside of work, or was work life? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that time it really was. I mean, I was working all the time. You know, I worked my 9-to-5, you know, 9-to-5. I'd get in the restaurant around 5:30. I'd work till 11 or 12. I was lucky to have managers that let me keep sort of a flexible schedule with restaurants, who'd normally have to be in there, you know, at 4. And I was getting there at 5:30 a lot of nights. And so work was a big part of my life. It was, you know, I would take trips with my friends from college. I would still go out with them from time to time. But I remember back then them saying to me all the time, like, man, we're doing all this fun stuff on the weekends and we're doing this and we're doing that. And you're just working, you know, you're not, you know, you sure you want to do this? You're not able to do all these things with us that we're doing. And you're not able to go out as much as we go out and all this stuff. And it was hard. I felt like I was missing out on stuff for sure. But I just felt like I wanted to do something more than what I was doing. And I didn't see any clear path, only 9 to 5-ing. I didn't feel like there was going to come a time where just 9 to 5-ing and having fun on the weekends, I was going to save enough money to do something differently. I didn't see that was ever going to happen. And so it just, you know, it just got to a point where I was just, you know, working and pushing on it. And I finally got to that point and, you know, it ended up all working out in the long run.
So, I mean, looking at that and thinking ahead, I mean, have you kind of made time or found time to make up for lost time in that process? And also, like, do you support your employees in the same way today, right? Just having come from that kind of a background.
Yeah, I mean, I think all my employees, I spend a lot of time meeting with, I guess you would call them like a, you know, wannabe entrepreneurs, people that are working for someone else with dreams of working for themselves or want to launch a company or want to do something different. I spend a ton of time meeting with those people, probably a couple times a week. And I'm always encouraging them to do it, depending on the circumstances. You know, if they have, you know, 4 kids at home and they're barely getting by paying their bills, you know, I don't recommend someone risk their entire life on a new business, right? But if a person's straight out of college and they're 21 or 22 and they're, you know, they don't have other people depending on them and they're in a good place in life to take risks and try to do something different, in that instance, I do recommend, you know, go for it. I always tell people, you know, if things go horrible and in 2-3 years from now, you are bankrupt, you have no money, you have nothing left, you can get a job, you can work, you know, you'll always have that opportunity. But if you are a person who doesn't have, again, you know, an entire family depending on you, or you're in a situation where the risk is just yourself and you're willing to, you know, be broke because the chances are if you're starting a business, you might not be super liquid rich at this point in time anyway. If you're willing to be broke, you know, you're broke as a 21-year-old and you're willing to be broke for a few years as a 24-year-old, well, then spend the next 3 years launching your dream. Because if you get to 24 and you still don't have a lot of money, just like you don't today, well, you're still very young, especially in, you know, today's modern times where people are waiting until they're 30s often to start a family or buy a home or do those types of things. So I always tell people, do it, take the chance. And, you know, I haven't seen that many people say, well, I wish I never did that. You know, I've seen a lot more people come to me and say to me, like, man, I really wish I would have tried this. I really wish I would have started my own business. Then I do see people saying, oh, well, I tried and I failed and now I wish I didn't do that. The great majority of people learn so much from failure or end up attaining success or end up failing a couple times and then getting successful that, you know, almost everyone's happy they did it. So I always push people to go for it and give it a try because the great, you know, the chances are it probably will work out for you in some way, you know.
I'm thinking about what you just said, and I think it's what, like 60% or more of companies, I think it's restaurants that fail in the first year. So I'm thinking about, I mean, the type of people that you try to mentor, that you're talking with, I imagine some of that is part of that conversation, the difficulties of owning a restaurant or brick and mortar business.
Yeah, no question. I think that's a big part of it. I think, you know, I think maybe a bigger part of it is not just the failure itself, but what does it mean? You know, what it, you know, they say, well, they might fail or I might fail or things are going to go bad. I will, but what does that mean? What is the big fear around that failure? Is it that you're going to be unhappy yourself? You failed. Is it going to be a blow to your ego? Are you worried about losing the money? Are you worried about going into financial debt? Are you worried about being in financial ruin? Are you worried about what other people think, what they're going to say? And I think that's the challenge is people have this monstrous fear of failure, but then sometimes they fail and it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be. You know, they can try again. They can get a job. They can, you know, there's a lot of things that they can do. It's more of the fear around failure. What does it mean about me? And then, you know, what does it mean about me? What does it say about me as a person that I failed, that I'm not good enough, or that, you know, my friends all said I would fail and now I did and they were right. And, you know, boo hoo. And so I think it's teasing that out as far as not just the failure itself, but what is your concern about the failure? What are you worried that the failure is going to say about you? And that's where I think a lot of people's concern is. This is not just the failure itself, but what does that mean to them, you know?
Yeah, I think it's taking some of the emotion out of that decision.
Yeah.
Well, you have a diverse portfolio of companies. I know just the ones that I know of, a barbershop, I think it's a doggy daycare, boxing club, restaurants, bars. And I feel like many of these places had a brand or like a team established before they even opened. Like it seemed like the barbershop, for example, it seemed like the person that was like the head barber, like had been there for years before the company even opened. Like, what is your methodology for starting a new company? Do you get approached by talent and then you invest in it, or are you doing active research?
Yeah, great question. So it's a little bit of both. I'm always thinking about what small business industries I want to go in. I think one of the reasons I've been successful is because I stay in my lane. I don't try to, you know, open things where I don't feel that I can add at least some value or a lot of value. So I'm doing brick and mortar based small businesses. And I think that there are certain things that I can do from my role in each one of them that can help each one of them be successful individually and in different industries. So I am always looking for different things I want to go into. I wanted to do a barbershop for a long time, and then the opportunity finally presented itself. But outside of that, the biggest part, as you mentioned, is the people. I'm looking for people who I would consider more or less an expert in what they're doing. And then also on top of being an expert in what they're doing, being the right type of person to partner with, being the right type of business owner. So you mentioned the barbershop. When I met Eric and John, who are my partners now, I was getting my haircut by Eric, and he asked to speak, you know, outside of the barbershop. He's like, hey, we should talk sometime. I'm like, great. You know, we met up, we talked, and he basically said, I want to start my own barbershop. You know, could you help me? Would you ever consider being a partner? For that deal, it was a very easy decision for me because I knew that Eric was an expert, or I considered him an expert. He had been cutting hair in Arlington for almost 17 years at that point. He had been cutting hair pretty much his whole adult life. He was in his late 30s. And then outside of that, he had everything else that I would say is, you know, just solid personal characteristics from a partner. He comes off as a good person. He is a good person. He's an honest guy. He has a pretty good attitude. He's willing to take on challenges. And John, you know, first I talked to Eric, and then very shortly after I talked to John. So it really was the three of us all along. And John, the same thing. John was born and raised in Arlington, was actually a bartender at Whitlow's for over a decade. So knew a ton of people in the area. Great guy, genuine person, was willing to push and do anything it took to make this thing successful. And so then I kind of see, you know, all the, from looking at it from afar, I see all the pieces are there that, you know, there's a lot of people in Arlington who are willing to pay for an expensive haircut. There's a lot of people with disposable income in Arlington. There's not enough high-end barbershops in Arlington. There was only, I think, one at the time, maybe one over on the other side of Arlington, like in Crystal City. So I felt the market was underserved. And then on top of that, you know, all those things being said, you know, I have two guys who are not only experts in their industry, but also are good people and have what I think are the makings of a good partner. So really, everything that I felt needed to be in place was in place. And so it all fit. It all made sense that there was a need in Arlington. There was an industry that hole that could be filled. And there was, you know, a couple guys that I thought are very, very talented, who are good partners. And so I knew, you know, a lot of times people go into business and they're worried success or failure. That was not a business where I ever felt success or failure was a possibility. I felt without a doubt it would be successful. The question was just how successful, how fast. And so that's a perfect example of just having, you know, the right industry to go into in the right place, as well as, you know, the right team, really solid guys to work with. And so it was a great, great thing. And, you know, that's the same across other industries like bash boxing. You know, we have a great team, but the number one person in bash boxing, the CEO, is Alex Trakas. She's a fitness star. She had been in fitness her whole life. She's an amazing person. She cares about people. She knows how to motivate people. She knows how to run an amazing team and really get the team behind her. And, you know, Arlington did not have any boxing-based fitness. So the same thing, you know, an industry where there's a hole to be filled, there's, you know, the right type of person who could be an amazing business partner and an amazing leader. And we put it together and it fits very well. And to your point, it's all about the teams. You know, we try to put really cool brands in neighborhoods and in places where they'll be a good fit. But it's really, really, really about the team. It's about, you know, working with the right people from a partnership standpoint. So whether it's John and Eric at Bearded Goat or it's Alex at Bash Boxing, it's about working with those right people, but it's also about how, you know, do those people have the capacity to build a great team and make the team believe in the vision too? And both those brands, you know, 100% did. You know, Bash opened at the tail end of 2018. Beardigo Barber opened at, you know, the beginning of 2019. So they're still very young brands, but they have a really, really, really strong team culture. You've seen very few people leave either one of the brands. We still have a lot of the same people. Bash has almost all of its original coaches. I think we only lost one in the past year. Beardigo Barber has almost all of the original barbers. I don't know off the top of my head if we lost anyone. So it's all about finding the right people to work with that can inspire a strong team culture, and then just putting those people and those teams in a place where there's already a need for, you know, what our product is serving.
You know, it's interesting, Scott. One of the things you mentioned talking about disposable income, when you think about entrepreneurs, there's a couple of different types of entrepreneurs. One of those is, hey, I'm a lifestyle entrepreneur. I'm going to build businesses to support the lifestyle that I want for myself. And you go through your portfolio of companies, and it's like you're building businesses to support the lifestyles that other people want. Again, whether it's personal care, fitness, nightlife, etc. But the big thing that's going to fuel a big part of that is going to be disposable income. You know, this area consistently ranks, you know, whatever list you look at, top five, top 10 for wealthiest counties in the U.S. So talk to me, if you can, a little bit about, you know, using that and anything else you see, why this is a great area for businesses like yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, because I always tell people that, you know, how are you so successful so fast, and how are you able to open so many places so fast? I always tell people a huge part of that is Arlington. A huge part of that is Northern Virginia in general. Had I opened my first bar in a suburb as opposed to Ballston, you know, the Ballston neighborhood of Arlington, I don't think I would have been half as successful as I was lucky enough to be. You know, I opened my bars in places where you have tons of 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings who make a very solid amount of money, who have a lot of money to burn up on the weekends, you know. Even with the expensive rents here, you know, whatever they're paying in rent, they might be paying $2,000, $3,000. Even paying that in a month, they are able to, you know, still have $1,000 a week to spend on themselves. And so they want to spend it getting a nice haircut or going to Bash or going to a bar or restaurants. So in Northern Virginia, we are so lucky to be in this market. It is so supercharged. You know, there are people who come here and are just blown away by how many successful people there are in this area. And it's crazy. And so I think a lot of that has contributed to my success without question. I think that, you know, if I had opened in a suburb, you know, I guess this is a suburb in a way, but if I had opened in a small town or, you know, a smaller suburb or a less wealthy suburb, I think that I would not have been able to achieve the success I've achieved today. But because I opened in Nova, you know, where there's just so many jobs and so much disposable income for young people who have a college degree and can get a good job, that has really helped me be able to just open and open and open, because, you know, we open and something gets successful in 3 or 4 months, and now, you know, it's breaking even or it's slightly profitable, then it gives us the confidence to open something else or another location of something we're already doing. And so I think that's been a great part of my, my path as well.
And I don't think that we can go without talking about the pandemic, though I know it probably takes over most of your day these days.
Yeah.
You've been faced with new challenges over the past few months, like just operating expenses have never been higher for brick and mortar. Like I'm thinking of cleaning expenses, the measures you have to go through, capacity limitations, staffing challenges, all these city guidelines and state guidelines that keep changing. So like, how are you approaching your business right now, looking at the pandemic, like right now, and then looking ahead a few months, if you can?
Yeah. You know, it's been tough. I don't think all of our brands will survive it. I think maybe one or two might not. You know, I think what you hear most people saying is that the really strong brands will, you know, the really strong locations, really strong businesses will survive. The ones that were doing just okay might. The ones that were not doing so well might not. So I don't want to say too much about which those are or what may or may not survive it. But I think there's a chance that, you know, one or two. I'm a part of probably 15 or 16 projects throughout Nova right now that have brick and mortar locations. I think there's a couple things that may not survive, and you know, it is what it is. We're happy to be healthy. We're happy to be operating in a lot of our businesses now. We're happy to be open where we are open, and so I think it's just doing what you can with what you have. You know, and I think understanding that a big sort of buzz phrase I keep hearing business owners and business people I know around the area saying in most years, it's about growth for business people. It's about how much did your company grow? How much bigger did you get? How much better did you do than the year before? I keep hearing business people around Northern Virginia say, it's always about growth. It's always about getting bigger and better. But in 2020, it's about survival. That if you just survive 2020, you're doing better than you know a lot of people out there, and you're doing better than you can expect to or can hope to. And that's kind of my personal thought as well, too, is that right now it's about getting through 2020 and keeping the brands alive and well. That if, you know, eventually whatever is going to happen, vaccine, you know, we come out of this herd immunity, whatever's going to happen, then we can focus again on, let's try to grow these businesses. Let's try to really super perform. Let's try to do better than we did, you know, in past years. But 2020 is really about survival. It's about, you know, continuing to move forward. And that's really my outlook too, is I'm definitely not thinking about making money this year. I'm not thinking about, you know, can this business grow 15%? Can it grow 20%? I'm thinking about, can we keep people employed? Can we stay open? Can we continue to deliver a good product for our customers through this, so that when people go back out into the world full time again, we'll be in a good place? And so that's really where my head's at. I think that's where a lot of people's heads are at. So that's the goal. And I think getting through it is the goal of 2020. And then where we are, you know, today's June 30th, you know, thank God we're halfway through this year. Not to say that it's all going to be over after 2020, but we're halfway through this year. It's been a rough year for a lot of reasons across the board. You know, March 15th is sort of looked at as the shutdown date. And so now it's just, look, we're halfway through the year. Let's get through the next half. 2021 is going to be the same as it is now. Let's get through 2021. Let's do whatever we have to do to keep going and keep these businesses alive, so that once it's over, we can then think about growth and success and all that stuff. And we are in a, you know, fortunate position with one or two of our companies that are going to add locations. Beard & Goat Barber is currently working on adding a location in D.C. We could potentially be open in 3 or 4 months. My dog daycare brand, Playful Pack, dog daycare and boarding, we're working on adding a location for that as well, too. And there might be one or two others, but we're also looking at potentially closing locations. And so there are some of the opening going on. We're used to opening a lot more than that. I mean, last year we opened 4 or 5 new locations across my different companies. But right now it's about survival. It's personally about survival. You know, I spend a lot of the money I make, I dump back into my businesses. So I'm not, you know, what people would consider rich by any means. I'm certainly not cash rich. So on a personal level, it's about survival. On a business level, it's about survival. And it's about just moving forward and getting things to go forward and making sure that you know, that we can do that.
Yeah, just holding on. It's kind of a depressing reality, but I like the positive approach that you're taking on it. I am curious if you could say, and you don't have to elaborate on it, but like, what's the differentiating factors between a company that will survive and that won't survive during this time? Is it location? Is it the type of service that it offers that's just no longer needed right now? Is it the type of space, you know, where people can come in? I'm just curious about what's the differentiating factor?
Yeah, you know, I talk to business people about this all the time too, and I don't think I see enough of the business world overall to be sure I'm right about this, but from what I gather, as crazy as it sounds, I think a large part of it is just luck, and not blind luck or dumb luck, but really luck as to what industry you are in, what industry you happen to be in, what type of business you happen to have within that industry. I'll go to restaurants, for example. You know, there are some fine dining places that are crushing it. There are some full service places that are doing well to go business. But for the most part, the trend that I've seen is that if you are a pizza shop or a sandwich place or a place that has a small real estate footprint where you don't have that many square feet to pay rent on, and you are doing a lot of to go business, you probably have a lot more likely chance of surviving through this than if you are a huge sit down restaurant and that's really the way you make your money, or if you're a bar. It really does. You know, and then also where you're located. For example, one of our restaurants, Barley Mac in Roslyn, we feed a lot off of office business. We have a lot of corporate business, happy hours after corporate business, corporate lunches. We're slammed for lunch during normal life, without COVID. We're slammed for happy hours. So now not having that business has hurt us tremendously. And it's really a big sticking point for us. And so I think it's about where you're located. I think it's about what type of clients you serve. I think it's about what industry you happen to be in. Those are just huge things. I mean, I look at, bikes, like bicycles. You know, bike shops are killing it. They're selling out. There's more people that want to do stuff outside because that's all you can do these days. You can't go to a space and hang out in a restaurant or a bar or walk around in a mall or do those kind of things. So bike stores are selling out, right? And they're selling bikes like crazy. There's a line to get in some bike stores. Dogs, for example, puppies are, or shelters are running out of puppies. Breeders can't breed enough dogs. They're selling dogs like crazy. So, you know, people are at home more, so they want stuff to do at home, and they're not at work. So, hey, maybe this is a good time to buy a puppy and get a dog. So it's all about what industry you're in right now. It is all about the way that your industry plays into people being at home all the time. You know, you see video game sales spiking. You know, Zoom as a company is killing it because people can't meet in offices. They're meeting at home. So it's all about, it's luck in that way. It's luck in the way of how does my industry and how does my business play into the new way of life and the new rules currently. And that can make you or break you. You know, there's some people who they need, you look at, let's say, the casino industry, where the casino industry must have people in their space spending money. They must have people gambling. They must have people spending money in restaurants. So naturally, they're going to starve right now. Look at one company I've been reading a lot on for the past few years. This is a larger company. But, you know, there are examples throughout Northern Virginia, too, like, let's say, King's Dominion. I look a lot at Disney World. Disney World needs people to be in those spaces. So you might have, you know, King's Dominion and these places around Nova that they need people. Look at convention centers or event spaces. Let's say places that are not restaurants, but are event spaces. They host weddings. They host corporate events. Hotels that host corporate events. Those places are struggling horribly because they need a lot of people in one small space to make money. If an event space can only make money on corporate events, weddings, you know, putting 100 or 200 or 300 or more people inside their space, that's not happening right now. They've been reduced to maybe zero revenue. But if you happen to own a bike shop in Northern Virginia, you're probably selling bikes faster than you have ever sold bikes before. You can't get enough bikes in. There's a line to get into your store, right? So it is just a big part of luck in a way, and trying to figure out how does your business play into all this. And it's crazy. It's crazy to see that, you know, who would have ever thought this would happen, and who would have thought that a business that was just doing okay might now be killing it. A business that was killing it might be doing zero now. And so, you know, it's tough to just see that there's people that have worked so hard for their businesses for years, sometimes decades. And now, because of this, you know, they own an awesome event space that they work on all the time. Well, now maybe every wedding that they have booked for the summer of 2020 is canceled, and they are really struggling as a business. But a lot of it just happens to be luck right now, it seems.
There really was no way to time the market on this one. Like you're talking about, it's basically luck. You know, the bike stores, and I know there's a few in Arlington. Anytime I walk by them, there's a long line, but there's no way. Like they would have gotten a lot more inventory. Like it's taking months to even get a bike from there. No, I completely agree with that. It sounds like you're looking at other restaurants, other entertainment companies. And I know that other companies are looking to you and looking at your restaurant group and saying, okay, what's he doing? What's happening? What type of advice would you have for someone that owns one startup restaurant or like one small business in the Northern Virginia, DC region? Like what advice would you have to them right now to do like as a responsible business owner?
Yeah, I guess get creative with to-go offerings for restaurants. You know, that a lot of restaurants are selling alcohol now, which you could never do before, and doing different stuff on getting creative to go. And that's really as much as you can do. I guess plan as effectively as you can for the future. Study the industry, see what other people are doing. You know, not just here in Nova, but beyond Nova. What's working for people? What have people been able to sell that are selling like crazy? Like for example, for restaurants, you see a lot of people selling those sort of like adult Capri Suns, where it's like the pouched alcohol and people think they're really cute and they look cool and they're fun and all you gotta do is stick a straw in and drink it. So that's like a new idea I see people taking advantage of. But really just watch what other people are doing, see what other people are doing to become successful, and do it whatever you can to keep your restaurant afloat. And then just from a small business side in general, you know, do whatever you have to do to keep costs in line. I mean, we've had to work in a lot of our businesses where we wouldn't normally work before. You know, we're at times working the job that hourly staff would do so we could keep, you know, our costs down, you know, hold things down and be as tight as you can from a cost standpoint as you plan for the future. And sadly, the hard thing about that is it means you have to reduce your labor force. You have to lay people off. I mean, that's been something that has happened from really big business and big industries to all the way to mom and pop shops and really small places. And it's deeply unfortunate. It's the last thing you want to do. One of the best parts about owning businesses is to be able to provide a way for people to make income and for people to do better with stuff. And, you know, you just can't do that right now. And you have to make tough choices. So I think it's just buckle down now, try to stay creative, try to see what other people in the industry are doing. And as you're staying creative, try to prepare for the future and just remain hopeful, stay optimistic. Just hope that we will come out of this okay, and we'll get to a place where we can all work together and perform together again and do the best that you sort of can in the meantime.
And what about from a mental, emotional standpoint? So I think anytime I see you on social media, you are walking or running like 5 to 15 miles, it seems like. Is that kind of your outlet mentally? Like what do you do to make sure you stay sane?
Yeah, it's a big outlet for me mentally. It has been for a couple of years now. It wasn't always in sort of my business career, and I wish I would have gotten on that earlier. You know, I always tell people I exercise a ton in the morning, and it's strangely not that much for physical fitness. It's not for what it does for my body. It's certainly not for how I look. It's not for any of that stuff. It's really for mentality. It's for the way that I think after that, the way that I feel mentally, how I can get all that stress out. And so I highly recommend that. Walking is something I've gotten big into. I've always been a little bit of a runner, and I take a lot of batch classes. Walking is something I've gotten into now more than ever, because it's just, you know, putting the phone away and taking a walk for an hour or 2 hours can really just clear the mind, and getting some steps in and walking a few miles can really just bring you back down to earth and make you realize that, okay, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, but I'm here, I'm still alive. You know, I can clear my mind out a little bit and relax. And fitness for me from a business standpoint is just indispensable now. It's not something I can get rid of or even want to get rid of, but it's a necessity. It's highly essential to my business and the way that I work and the way that I function. And so it's important. And I think it's any entrepreneur that's going through a lot. I've told a lot of my friends, I had a friend who is a financial advisor. He manages people's money. When this first went down, he was doing really bad mentally, very, very poorly. And I told him, listen, man, just go outside and, you know, run as hard as you can for 20 minutes, just as hard as you can until you're out of breath, until you're a sweaty disaster, you're exhausted. And then after that, just relax, you know, but just run as hard as you can for 20 minutes, as hard as you can, you know, so that you're out of breath, so you're dripping in sweat and all that stuff. I was like, I'm not saying it's going to make you feel 100% better or 95%. But it's going to be more than one. It might help you feel 5% better, 10% better. And, you know, he did that, and he was like, yeah, you're right, I feel a lot better. And I think we get cooped up in our cubicles or our offices or our homes now, and we have everything we want at our fingertips. We have a laptop in front of us, and we have a phone in front of us, and we can sit here and work on our computers forever if we want to, but it's not going to be the same thing as, you know, taking a walk and all that stuff. And so it's important to get people out there, get them moving. You know, it's been proven over and over again that getting your body moving has a positive effect on your mentality. And so I think that's just a really important thing.
I will second that as a fellow boxing trainer, and I'm a runner as well. It's my training. Boxing is my side gig, but I look at all the other like successful CEOs, and they're all extremely fit. You look at Jeff Bezos, you look at Branson, like all these people put their physical health really high up and make it a non-negotiable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got that from, you know, there's a book by Tim Ferriss, the guy who wrote the 4-Hour Workweek. It's called Tools for Titans. And I read that book, and it's all about top performers and how they got to be top performers. And a lot of it is that it's they got out there and they pushed on their body, and they still push on their body. And then their body helps push on their mind, and it pushes their whole day forward. So it's really important. And I think it's something that I hope to carry with me for, you know, forever, as long as I'm in business and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and I love that book. I love Tim Ferriss. I'll put a link into the podcast episode on that, because I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I do want to give you the opportunity, you know, how can people help out some of the restaurants right now or your businesses? Like, where can they find you, support you, all of that? Because we want to make sure the Nova community is thriving during this time of need, and that we're acting as a community.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. A lot of my stuff I post all the time on Instagram. It's just my name. So it's at Scott Parker, ScottParker. I post all my stuff on there. You can find all of my businesses on there, listed on there. If you want to check out the different stuff that I'm a part of, I work with great partners in every single thing that I'm a part of. There's nothing that I own by myself. I have a great team, you know, all around me all the time. And so my Arlington restaurants are on there. My Alexandria restaurants are on there. And then, you know, our other stuff in Nova is Playful Pack Dogs, that's dog daycare and boarding, Bash Boxing, that's group fitness boxing. There's two locations in Arlington, and then Beer to Go Barber as well. So you can check all my Nova stuff out right there. And you know, I appreciate the time and thanks for everything, guys. Great talking.
Thank you for tuning in. You can listen to this episode and subscribe to future episodes on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to give us that 5-star review so that we can get our podcast out to more and more listeners. If you are a business leader or know of any business leaders that you would like to nominate to be a guest on the show, please visit us at thenovabusinesspodcast.com.